Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to Yes But Why, episode 259, my discussion with Irish improviser Neil Curran. But first, let's talk about our sponsors. Today's episode of Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible. Get your free audiobook download and your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Today I picked up a self-help book out of my Audible library and started to listen to it. I'd tell you the name of it, but I'm trying to avoid swearing in the first 3 seconds of my podcast, so let's just say it's called Unbleep Your Brain. Get it? It's not your average self-help book. It's super fun and available on Audible. Head on over to audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy right now and download the app. You'll get a free audiobook and access to hundreds of books and podcasts that are included with your membership. Now's the time. Get Audible. Yes But Why podcast is also sponsored by PodcastCadet.com. PodcastCadet.com is all about helping people with podcasting. My husband and I started it because we are on all the podcasting groups on Facebook and the like, and there are a lot of misconceptions out there about podcasting. How to record, how to retain rights, what you can and cannot put in your episode, lots of stuff. So please contact us. We want to share our experiences with you and hopefully save you from making some of the mistakes we've made in the past. Connect with us now at podcastcadet.com. Use promo code YBY20 and you'll get 20% off the first service or workshop you buy. This week on Yes But Why, I had the pleasure of chatting with Irish improv influencer Neil Curran. We talk about Del Close, Quantum Leap, and Improv Utopia. And of course, we talk about the best improv group on the internet, Improvisers Talking About Food. Such fun. I now present to you Yes But Why, episode 259, Neil Curran and the ever-evolving art form of improv. Enjoy. Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why podcast. Yeah. What was the first moment in your life when you were aware that you wanted to do creative stuff, that you wanted to be a performer or be involved in creating shows?
You know, it's funny. I have a strange relationship with the word creative. So I was a very introverted child. My mother was an actress and I grew up immersed in theater. And like everything when you're a child, you don't appreciate it. You know, your dad could be Neil Armstrong, first person on the moon. You take it for granted. But my father came from a business background. So I was quite fortunate that rather than having, you know, parents who say, you should go study this or do that, I was allowed to tap into, you know, theater and drama as a young person. Totally not appreciated, but have that as a resource, which was incredibly liberating and empowering for an introverted child. So improvisation in kids' drama when I was doing was a huge part of it. Of course, it's not improv as we know it in that sense, and that's gonna pee off the purists by me saying that. So improv was a tool that was being used a lot though in, say, teenage drama and kids' drama, and it was quite liberating, you know, to have a part of your life as an introvert where you're just told to kind of pretty much as a child do what you want. You know, you have a framework, you're given a theme or a topic, and you would kind of devise your improvisation with your peers or your friends. So that was quite empowering. But I never viewed it, and I still don't view it as this incredibly powerful creative way for me to spread my love in the world, because I don't have an interest in sketch comedy, not as from creative perspective. And people are, you know, say, oh, you should write, or, you know, it's COVID, you should be doing lots of writing and stuff. And I'm like, no, I'm not a creative person. I just do improv, which seems weird. I've kind of viewed it a bit like, as an improviser, you're just channeling, you know, ideas, energy, and I guess the energy of other people through the characters to create something on stage. I realize I've used the word create there and knocked creativity on the head. But, you know, it's like the thing about this makes no sense. Well done, Neil. We're off to a great start.
No, you're doing great. Don't worry.
the only analogy I can give is a bit like someone who does improv and they get introduced as a comedian, and that makes a lot of improvisers go, oh, you know, we're not comedians, we're improvisers. It's a little bit like that. If you told me to sit down and write a comedy sketch, you know, I probably wouldn't get very far. I don't do it that often, and maybe it is a thing of, well, you should try, Neil. But that's a different ball game altogether. So maybe improv is kind of like, you know, an outlet, a form of therapy, or just something fun, because it's about playing at the end of the day. Yes, there's lots of other things going on. There's lots of things I'm able to do as part of that, but ultimately it comes back to playing. And certainly, I have very vivid memories of playtime when I was a kid, and you know, having fun with that as a child. And I guess we're now doing that as adults, and no one's judging us for us, except the people who don't like our shows. But aside from them, nobody is judging us for it. It's just accepted as a normal behavior for an adult to engage in.
So do you think of improv like as like a spiritual experience? Like, because you've mentioned like channeling energies and like channeling, and I appreciate, and I will delve in with you, this idea of like improv versus sketch comedy versus like comedy in general, but like I'm interested as well by the way you describe your experience of improv as channeling energies and finding the characters out of the ether. Like, does it feel to you like you're spiritually connecting with something?
No, I wouldn't go that far, but you know, ultimately improv is an art form where you totally have to support the people that you're performing with. It is completely about the other person and what they're doing, and your job is to, you know, be the bridge that their car drives over. Your job is to be the airplane that they fly across the sky in. Your job is to be the water that they swim in. So we're all playing support roles. You know, even the people who the audience say, that girl is so funny or that guy is so funny, they're still playing a support role to the rest of the team. The team, now the cliche, the sum of the team is greater than the sum of the individual parts. You know, that is so true at improv. And I think for a lot of people, it's not until we realize that as an improviser that it falls into place. So that's my job. When I go out on stage, whether I have the good fortune to perform with yourself, Amy, or whether I'm performing with, you know, an ensemble of six people, my job is to focus completely on them and give them everything they need. And that means, you know, if we want to draw the spiritual analogy, that means whatever creativity that comes to them, I got myself out of that creative limbo land, whatever creativity comes to them, my job is just to be there and be the platform, be the mechanism to allow that to come to fruition, to allow the flower to blossom. It's way too spiritual, but no.
No, it's okay. If you don't think of it that way, then you don't have to like force it. No need to shoehorn an idea into what's not already there. I just, the way you spoke of it seemed so ethereal, seemed so like, you know, this character's passing through the veil and filling me, and I'm like living their life for a moment, which is cool. And some people really think that.
I do to some degree. I do think, you know, improv is a bit like the TV show Quantum Leap. You know, we're all Sam. These characters. I think it might have been Dave Pascuezzi or TJ Jagodowski said this originally, but you have to view the characters that they exist somewhere in the universe, like may not be in this planet, but might be another planet. And we have to treat them with respect. And I think that's so true. So that when you step into that character, and even if it's just the man who sells newspapers on the corner and he's angry, even if that's the character, you know, he still has feelings about things that may not come up in the scene, but know that maybe he doesn't like, you know, to eat red meat, and maybe he has a distaste for reality TV, and maybe he loves Mozart. That may never come up in a scene, but that allows you to give three dimensions to what is presented as a two-dimensional character. And when the scene is over, that character still lives on in their existence, and they go about their lives. So it's very much like Quantum Leap. You're just, for a moment in life, just taking a slice of it and representing that on stage. So you better do a good job, no different than you want an athlete to represent your country to their best of their ability in the Olympics.
Man, the quantum leap. I've been doing improv for 12 years, and the quantum leap thing just punched me in the face. It was great. That is, now I'm like, I was like trying so hard to focus on you because my brain immediately was ignited with 1,000 quantum leap show ideas. And I was like, no, no, you focus on him because you just totally like inspired me in that moment. That is a great example. Like, it's exactly what it is. And I also appreciate sort of even the idea of how that in and of itself isn't spiritual in the way that I'm trying to ask, but it is what it like jumping into somebody else's life for a moment idea of it. Like, man, super cool. So to sidestep to the other thing you were talking about, which is the improv versus sketch comedy thing, so I talk to a lot of people from all over the world. And so improv is not always, I would say more often than not, not comedy. I'm finding in the rest of the world. In the old States, yep, it's comedy. Is it comedy in Ireland? Is that where since that's where you're starting, people are trying to get you in the comedy world because that's what improv's all about for you, or how does it play out?
Well, you know, I think for the most part, the vast majority of improv that we see is comedy. And I would be lying to you if I said comedy isn't a desired output, but I think comedy and laughter is sometimes the least interesting thing about improv. And the example I give people is, Amy, you and I could go to see the best comedy film that was ever created tonight, Spinal Tap. We could go to Spinal Tap and we would come out of Spinal Tap and say, oh my God, that was so funny. Do you remember the bit with this? Do you remember with that? And after 10, 15 minutes of maybe regurgitating the lines we'd remember, we'd say, what would you know? Oh, let's go get a beer. And we talk about everything else except Spinal Tap, other than to occasionally go, do you remember that bit? But if you go to a piece of art, if you go to a drama and they affect you emotionally in other ways that comedy doesn't, then that affects your audience, it moves your audience. And that gives you something to think about, something to reflect on, and something to talk about. And we don't see enough of that in improv, yet we forget that improv is one of the most spontaneous art forms, that time is largely, well, time is irrelevant. We don't, like, so let's say not that we never get enough offers from current affairs, but let's say that something happens in the news today, as is every day. We don't have to go off and write, you know, spend a week writing material to take a satirical look at it. We can just create it in the moment. So we have that luxury. We have that privilege as improvisers. So I try not to limit myself to just viewing that this is going to be comedy on stage, because certainly in the shows I perform, and I lean mostly towards a narrative, if a scene ends up being funny, great. But if a scene ends up being dramatic, great, even better. If you blend the two, if you take a leaf out of Shakespeare's book and can build up drama and tension and have a very serious scene that, you know, has a message in it, wonderful. You're pulling a number of different strings. To me, the most rewarding thing, well, some of the most rewarding things that have happened to me through improv is I had somebody once cry during my show, not because it was bad, because they were genuinely moved by something that happened on stage. And when people come up and start talking to you, oh, the character, that choice that character made. I remember one time, he doesn't know this, but when I did one of my Neo Plus One shows, it was actually a show in Dublin, and Dave Rozowski was at it. And he asked me about a choice that my character made, and I for Neo Plus One, I use an audience member, I use a non-improviser, and he asked me about a choice of character made, and he discussed it with me, and, you know, he doesn't know this, but I was like, well, Dave Rozowski has asked me this question, you know, this is great, this is, you know, it clearly I was able to make a connection with the audience in a strong way to do that. So I find that very interesting. And that's what art should be interesting. Comedy is great. Don't get me wrong. There's nothing, you know, it's so uplifting. It's such a rush to be able to make an audience laugh. But that isn't the be all and end all. Now, I caveat this by saying, to me, improv is the end. You know, a lot of people will view improv as a means to an end. You know, some figures even position, you know, on the hierarchy, improv, you start with improv and you move into sketch. A lot of people who are actors and want to make a name in show business, improv can be a means to an end. But to me, improv is that ultimate. You know, it's like, well, let's see how far we can go with this as an art form. How do we push the boundaries? How can we use improv to kind of use as a platform to, you know, talk about how we feel, what's going on in the world. You know, stand-up comedy did that in countries, you know, Ireland, stand-up comedy was the voice of the people for decades because of the oppression of the church. And from what I understand from talking to friends and reading the news, it's doing the same thing in India. Stand-up comedy has become this massive force in India. But why can't improv be doing that? You know, stand-up comedians have to go into a room and write material. We don't. Like, we can and should tap into this. Of course, not everyone wants to do that. You know, improv is very easy in regard even just, hey, let's improvise. Let's just do something. You don't have to think of it beyond, you know, the realm of what you want to do and what's comfortable. But I just think there's possibilities there. And from what I understand, I'm getting so old in this, I never know where my resources come from. But from what I understand, Del Close said near to the time of his death, find the potential in this art form, or we haven't hit that spot yet. And I often think to myself, genuinely do ask, if Del Close was alive today, how would he view improv now as an art? Would he think that we've kind of tapped into that, you know, ether of amazingness? I'm not thinking of the right words here, but hopefully that comes across in the right way. The full potential of improv as an art form, I certainly don't think has been realized yet. And that's not a critique, and it's not a criticism of what we do. It's actually something exciting to be able to say to ourselves, you know, we haven't hit it yet. We're still, how far down the rabbit hole can we go with this? That potential is untapped. But that's just kind of how I view it. You know, improv is, if we pigeonhole ourselves, it's like improv, even like the way a lot of people advertise shows, or we're talking about improv with comedy attached to it. As soon as you tell somebody you're doing an improv comedy show, you're doing a comedy show. You know, the inward improv is kind of irrelevant at that point. It has to be comedy. So you're letting your audience down if you're not funny. Whereas it's nice when people say, hey, I'm doing an improv show, or I'm doing an improvised theater show. You know, I often, with Improv Fest Ireland, we will say, you know, it's improvised theater and comedy festival. You know, it kind of, let's get it all. Make it as broad as we can. And I don't hope that doesn't come across as quite preachy. It's just like, you know, the potential is, I think, huge, and it's not a critique. It's opportunity for us.
No, I think it's based on all of the different schools that you've had experience with and all the different kinds of improv that you personally have tried and been part of that lead you to your own theories about, you know, the way improv should be. Side note, I believe if Del Close was alive right now, he'd be super pissed about improv. I think he'd think it was corporate and terrible, and that we were using it the wrong way. But that's just because I see him, and I'd never met him, but like in my head, I see him as sort of like a hippie who wants things to be all grassroots, and that if Del Close had his way, that no improv theater would ever get bigger than like 30 people. And then like, that's it. Like, that's true. The end. And it's like, oh, you want, what are you, 31? Start a new one, because that, we're done. This is as many, before it gets terrible, this is what it is. But that's just my like side theory on him. As far as your experience and whatnot, it would seem that, you know, a lot of people I talk to don't even, like, when I say comedy in improv, they're like, oh, that's just because you're American. Because here, it's like it is unusual if the improv is dramatic, right? Like, every school is creating improv comedy, right? From my point of view, when I even teach, I'm teaching with comedy structures in mind from the get. Like, so as soon as I'm teaching you how to just talk off the cuff, I'm also teaching you little cues and pathways that you can take that will lead you to comedy. Even if you don't know what to say or how to do it, if you go up the stairs, and you will get to something that's funny. And that's just the way that I'm teaching, because comedy is the basic framework that we are starting from, right? But from your perspective, both of the education you've received and the education that you give, what kind of, like, how are you presenting it? Clearly, comedy is something that's like a byproduct occasionally. So how are you setting up, and you don't have to give me the secret sauce that people are going to pay you for, but like, you know, what is the way that you think of teaching and presenting improv that is not structured with comedy?
Yeah, that's a fair question. Like, I just position it, you know, from my courses that people sign up to learn from me, and this is separate to the business application. It's just improv. I get excited by teaching people who don't want to be on stage the skills of improv. And a lot of people who come to me are professionals. They want to learn the skills of improv. And if I do my job right, I won't have to sell them the idea of getting on stage. They will just want to get on stage. And that, you know, it's nice to see, certainly in Ireland, that there's people who are huge contributors to the improv scene in Ireland, who, when they started, say, class with me, would say, I have no interest in being on stage, and they go on to be part of epic groups and, you know, organizers of events. And that's really great to see. But that's a particular interest of me is professionals. I mean, the professional world is screaming out for the skills of how we create improv on stage, how we create the art on stage. They're screaming out for the skills of improv, and I'm able to share that with them. Now, I do have a little, my background, you know, I worked in the corporate sector for decades, you know, I was in management, so I'm able to blend the two worlds. So it's nice in a class of somebody, you know, saying, hey, I want to improve my skill, public speaking skills, I don't want to be on stage. And it's like, hey, here's your, when you're doing your public speaking and work, that is performing, you are on stage, you know, you're just not cracking jokes throughout it. So that is, you know, what excites me. And I do work with, you know, actors and with theater companies, but broadly speaking, the vast majority of people who come to me are professionals. In saying that, there is misconceptions about improv. I just wrapped up a course for a theater company in Dublin where improv wasn't the goal of the course, but it was about teaching them how to form structures around creating shows over Zoom, because Ireland's going to be stuck in the Zoom world for the next 20 million years. But improv was the tool that was used in it. But I knew that if I positioned that as, hey, improv and structures and forms, they wouldn't be interested. So, but what was nice, we had our last class last night, was like one person was like, I had no idea I could use improv in such a way, you know, to achieve these creative, dramatic goals and so on and so forth. And that was really great to see. And that, you know, that's one person who now sees the light, who, you know, an actor that kind of no longer fears improv as this thing that comedy does, or this thing I don't like because I'm made to do things improvised, you know. So that's a nice thing to be able to do. So that's my particular angle, is most of the people who come to me are professionals, and if I do my job right, they will want to perform and go on and do those cool things. I also, one of the luxuries in Ireland, and certainly when I was learning improv, there was no big theatres. There still is no big theatres. There's a few of us who teach, and we're very lucky in Ireland. We have some great teachers, but there's no school affiliation. So there's no IO down the road. There's no Second City you can go to. But I think that's a good thing, because if you're serious about the art form, it forces you to have to learn in as many ways you can. So my career was very much a guerrilla career. I had to travel. Certainly any teachers who visited Dublin or get teachers over, I did that. But I spent a lot of time traveling and doing courses elsewhere. I absorbed in the a long time ago, before anyone had even thought of watching improv online, I was absorbing as much as I could. You know, my first experience of the Harold was watching Trophy Wife from IO West, you know, perform Harold's, and kind of dissecting that with, you know, Truth and Comedy in my other hand, and trying to work out what this Harold thing was. And that was my first kind of exposure to it. So that's, I think, a luxury. And you'll find that a lot in Europe, that that's the case in most, if not all, cities, that there is no one philosophy for improv in that country. It's just based on the exposure people have to different teachers. So I think that's, I would argue that's an advantage, because you don't have to subscribe to the kind of college mentality of, well, this is my theater, this is my school, and this is what we do. And I, you know, there's none of that kind of carry on. So it can be quite fruitful. Plus, you know, if you then marry that with, say, people who have a theater background, and they, you know, they have a very strong, culturally, a very strong theater background in their country. Like, say, when you watch some of the Italian theater groups perform, the work they do, the Italian improv groups perform, the work they do can mind-blowing, you know, can be incredibly, incredibly powerful. You have to pinch yourself and remind yourself you're watching improv. And isn't that cool that when that happens, you know? So, yeah.
Some of the best improv I've ever seen has been scenarios where you're like, there, how is it possible that these people are so well connected? And my theory always, and how I teach it, has to do with, you know, it's It's not about like this person's more skilled than that person. It's about the group. And if the group is super connected with each other, then they have the superpower that is being connected. Like you could put, you know, it's like random jams with like the top performers in the world that are just stuck together and just met each other. You know, they're going to be good technically, but as far as like the kind where you're like so swept up into the moment with them, I think that's more about human connectedness and like opening yourself up to having this experience with these people. And when you're in a class or when you're in a group, you know, this is who you work with. You got to like focus on them and give them the attention and be like, how can we be the best together than we can ever be? And that for me, I think is what the sort of improv theory that I take out into the world, you know, as far as like certainly with corporate work and whatnot, is this idea of like really appreciating the people in your team. Like, yeah, they might, you know, maybe you're like, oh, these people I don't get along with. Great. Awesome. But what do they contribute? And what are you going to contribute back to them that maybe will create a better, more symbiotic relationship where your personal feelings about whether you like or dislike them don't matter? Because it's about getting the work done. Like a machine isn't like friends with the other piece of machinery that like moves with it as it like creates something, but they both do their job and they give and take the way they need to. And that's how it gets done. And that's, that for me, I think connectedness, between people is the most important part when it comes to, doing improv.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think part of that connectiveness through improv is shared vulnerability. Mm. And sometimes a shared vulnerability from a beginner's perspective is the fact they regret signing up to an improv class when they realize it's tonight. You know, that's that's vulnerability. But as we go on, the vulnerability evolves into, you know, I have no idea what's going to happen. Isn't this great? You know, let's share that experience together. Yeah. I think that's a huge part. And in the modern world, vulnerability is so important. You know, as a thing we have to recognize, share, support, and appreciate.
Yeah. Plus, I feel like this last year has certainly built up a lot of our walls, both literally, physically, and also like sort of anxiety-wise. You know what I mean? Like, I love talking to strangers. Oh, man, I love it so much. But there is definitely not as much openness to it in the world anymore. Like my favorite thing to do when I go grocery shopping is to just randomly make people laugh around while we're like looking at pears together. And I make like a pear joke or like, I'm going down. I'm like, so much bread. Am I right? Like just where they're like, what did that girl just say? So much bread. Like, so just things, but like now people are more like they're, walls are up, they're more insular. I feel like the people that I'm interacting with in the improv world are people like you and I, diehards. We're into it. We want it. We're seeking it out. It's like, oh my God, give me some more of that improv. Are you, and now clearly the work that you did just now was people that weren't exactly like, yeah, give me an improv class. But like, how does it feel for you, given that we're all a little bit more, you know, sheltered, held together, you know, got our walls up? How did the recent experience, you know, break down the walls, get them to share their vulnerability?
Well, it's a great question. And it's a deep question because, you know, one of the things we've prided ourselves on as improvisers is the term community, you know, improv and community. And, you know, I think a lot of people who establish improv communities recognize early on that community is what drives improv. It's very much a collective as opposed to, you know, I'm going to set up a stand-up comedy club. You know, if you're opening an improv theater, if you're establishing an improv scene, community is at the core. And you know, improv, to quote a friend of mine in Denver, you know, improv is my master. You know, improv is who I serve, not the other way around. And in order to do that, you sacrifice a lot. In order to create community and maintain community, you sacrifice a lot and you give a lot of yourself. And we love community. And then the last year, over the last year, we kind of saw through, you know, the transparency of community in a lot of ways, because it caused us all to retreat initially. And then when we emerged from the ashes, when we realized actually this is going to go on longer than we think, you know, people who are serious about improv are going to embrace the online format and take it for what it is. But a lot of people didn't. And some communities have crumbled under that, sadly. That's not to say people should force themselves to do it, but then it kind of leads, it has you questioning that whole concept of community, I think. Well, I feel anyway. And the other thing about it is you can only do what's fun for you. And we all reach a burnout stage, you know, quite fast online. And I, the greatest of respect and admiration for, you know, this new era of improv. Like, one of the great things about online is there's names of emerging improv I would have never heard of before that are playing a blinder, you know, in this generation, or in this generation, in this new era of improv. And when we do go back to normality, and we will go back to normality, and when we do go back to normality, you know, I hope that they continue to rise to power, because some of the stuff that's happening online is just incredible. And you cannot say now, a year into this pandemic, improv online is not the same. It's a completely different form of entertainment, yes, but you can't knock it or diss it, because there's certainly theaters that are putting on incredible shows online that are, you know what, far more entertaining than some of the shows I've been in, you know. So let's be honest, you know, it's not that we're trying to recreate the stage on screen. It's just the screen is a new platform for us to entertain audiences. So a great admiration for that. But I, you know, even from my personal perspective, I had to kind of take a bit of a breather and kind of, you know, take stock of, you know, I did try to do a lot for community last year, and I just said, you know what, I'm going to burn out here. So I need to take a step back and just allow it to just bubble up inside me again and find that out. So I kind of realized that I need to put a lot more focus on myself and what I want to achieve through improv, and stop, you know, not necessarily make so many sacrifices from a community of me for a community perspective, and see what the next chapter in my life entails. And that was a bit of a crisis in some regard, you know, for myself. It's like, now what do I do? I can't run a festival. I can't do this now. So that was a bit of a crisis, but, you know, chatted to friends who were very encouraging. It's like, yeah, we knew this day would come, Neil, that you would eventually want to go, hey, why don't I do something for me and be really selfish about it? So that was kind of nice to be able to talk to people about that. But also, it's also scary as well, because, you know, you're kind of moving on to the next creative. Oh, damn it, I said creative. God damn it, Neil. You're moving on to the next opportunity. Not it, if that's even the right word. But yeah, I think when this is over, you know, we'll look at those figures, and I don't want to name names because I'll only leave people out by mistake, but we will look to those people who have been warriors through COVID in what they've done and what they've brought to the world, and they will be defining what improv looks like when this is all over. Because it won't be the big theaters, because they're going to be reluctant to put such cash investments in bricks and mortars to bring theaters. It will be the indie theaters that determine, you know, which is just theaters in Europe, because we don't have those big theaters. It's just theaters. But yeah, it will
be
the indie
theaters.
Let's be
clear, a lot of theaters in the US across the board have closed, like a significant portion, and not just small theaters, like big deal. Like UCB doesn't have a space of any kind anymore. Like, I don't know if that community will continue. Like, there's whole sections of schools, you know, that aren't going to be there anymore. Like, legitimately, the idea that UCB's, like, business model wasn't the right one is blowing the minds of improv school, like, people across the country. Because it was like, for a long time, people were like, gold standard. And it's like, is it though? From lots of perspectives, from like how they make money, how they pay their teachers, what's going on with that. Like, and we follow it like that's the news. Like, you know, Like I definitely have groups of people where we like send each other articles about like how other theaters are running just to be like, oh, okay. So I guess that's not the right thing. Like, so there's different things we get to learn from this in the good and the bad. Like, and like no disrespect meant to anyone in the UCB community, but the idea that we thought it was the right way to do things and then it wasn't, because financially it just couldn't maintain itself, was like, oh my God, what? Wait, what? And the idea, it's almost like you're talking about for yourself personally, what you thought was what you had to do and what the right thing was pulled out from under you. I was like, by the way, that thing that you've been looking at as a goal, not the goal. And you're like, how do I do this now? Right. And I 100% agree with you that when you let the weight off your shoulders from building community and then just try to be in community, that it can feel so much better. I mean, I ran an improv theater in its early stages and the mid in like, what's it, like 2012 to like 15 or something, where like I was the person who you had to talk to accomplish any task. And it was too much, too much, too much, too much. It took me years to like recoup after I stopped doing it, to like acknowledge that I personally had feelings. So the idea that you've had to do it with this insane pandemic punch in the face, like, hey, you didn't make a decision, or you didn't like stop working a job and decide to move forward. Like the world was like, Dunsky, like, that's it. You're not doing this anymore. And then you had to shift, like, you know, forgive yourself for being a little like reticent to like jump into the next thing, especially when it's like, am I getting into a life raft or is this a boat to somewhere cool? Like with all the decisions, you know. And then the other part is this idea of like, if I give up this, am I quitting? Am I like, should I hold on to this thing that I had because I'm strong and I've been through this? Or do I need to let this thing go and try to do something else? And both, by the way, I would like to tell you, you mentioned, oh, that's me being selfish. I don't think it's selfish to actually take care of yourself. Like to be in your own life and make decisions based on the outside stimuli, which you had no, you didn't like cause what happened. You were just like, oh, what? I can't do this job that I've been doing for a long time. All right, I will do something else, right? That's not selfish. That's literally living and surviving. But, you know, there's something great about this new chance that we can have if we embrace it in a positive way, in a way that, like you said, with the new people that I had never known about, all of a sudden we're like best friends with. I mean, you and I connected on an improvisers group about food. That's a community that I joined online since COVID to try to connect with people. And it's not even about improv, right? It's just about looking at food and talking about food. And it's the best. And it's,
isn't it just because it's like the best thing about it, the best thing about that group is that improvisers don't talk about improv, and that's why it's possibly the most popular Facebook improv group there is.
It really is. It's like, but it's connecting me in a way. But like, even this idea that like previous to this and like previous to COVID, I too was like trying to build community, like, come on guys, come on, do it. And now it's like, hey, what do I have? What do I want to do? How do I even do this? And the relaxing, like, I never would have been part of the improvisers for food group because I'd be like, listen, I'm too busy. I like can't get involved. I'm like, listen, I'm just like, social stuff is like important or whatever, but like I'm a worker, right? That's how I like imagined. And then the world was like, hey, did you want to work? Yeah. Every kind of work you've ever done in your whole life is now gone. So how's that feel? How you doing? How's that going? And it's like, I don't know. Right. So how, without this undercurrent of you being selfish, what is it that you're trying to, you know, what's your new jam? What's the thing that's like filling you with joy now in your new, you know, post-COVID new life?
Well, that's a tricky question because so much has changed and not a lot has changed. Does that make sense, Neil?
Yes.
I haven't left my house in a year. I've had a lot of reflection, you know, and ideas come into my head and I'm like, ooh, and then I'm like, no, wait, Neil, this is still not about you. This is a community thing, so don't do that. I wrote a script, which was a thing, but I do, so when I do those things like that, they end up becoming very personal and then they become, they're locked away in this fireproof vault. But I wrote a script, which is cool, which will become a play. A cast with only improvisers. But I've tapped into something, you know, I did a lot of corporate work, and the corporate work is the day job, the corporate training and you know, where improv is a funny thing in the corporate world, but I've actually done in the last year, I've been able to raise improv, platform of improv, to a higher level than I've been doing prior to that in the online world. Because after the initial shock of everything going online, companies are like, well, we still got to run a business here and we need training. And we've got this huge skills gap now because now everything is virtual. And it just so happens some of the specialties that I teach in the corporate world, you know, where, you know, fill those gaps. So that has been very interesting to me in seeing how improv has playing such an important part of organization soft skills and communication, you know, strategies and approaches to communication. So that's been fun. But also it has been a necessity because we have to continue working. COVID world doesn't stop just because it's a killer virus navigating it. So there's that as well. But I you know, without kind of harping on about it, improv is a little bit like the Star Wars saga, you know, and you can map this analogy to any particular view of improv in a space and time. So if you think the original trilogy, which are arguably the only three Star Wars films, but I'll get over that. And that's, you know, if you think about that, that is what improv is to a lot of us. It's the good times in improv. It's like, oh, that group I was in, or that theater. Or, do you remember when we trained at that? Do you remember when you and I were on that? Like, that is what improv is. And Star Wars had this huge community of people, you know, who loved the original trilogy and like high five and Star Wars conventions. And then there was talk of the prequels coming along. The prequels could be like, given the similar, prequels could be viewed as like COVID, you know, come these prequels. And then things get weird. It's like, you're still doing improv, but they're in this kind of prequel territory. And the thing about the prequels is, you know how it's going to end. You know that Darth Vader is going to emerge from Anakin and all that. And you know that all the characters that you hadn't seen in the original trilogy are going to die. So you know that's what's going to happen in the prequels. And then spoiler. It starts... Spoiler alert. And that's kind of what we're going through now. Like, the COVID is this prequel phase. And to some of us, we go, no, just hate it. So we switch off. Like, I don't like the prequels. I don't like improv and COVID. Rather than kind of saying, well, hang on a second, there's actually a creative opportunity here. And then we have the next generation, the three films, the Abrams films and Rian Johnson films. And they suck. But they suck because I'm still looking back at the original trilogy as the good old days, rather than saying, hang on, look, Rian Johnson. Rian Johnson completely spinned the whole concept of what Star Wars should be on its head and turned Luke Skywalker into a massive loser. In your face, original trilogy fans. So, you know, Rian Johnson, in many ways, are people who are doing things in improv now in an online world and doing them amazingly. And a lot of the hate Rian Johnson got were from people who just wouldn't let go of the original, the love they had from the original trilogy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I still don't like the Rian Johnson films, but I guess I'm going off on one here. But it's just recognizing, you know, that the pandemic has changed us, but we will go back to normal. But normal won't look the same as what it was. And the question we have to ask ourselves is, you know, what are we going to do as part of that? I think improv will lose a lot of people who were keen improvisers, you know, by the time this ends. But we'll have gained, you know, the richness of the new people and the people who've been doing great things as part of it. I think, to get back to your original question, what am I doing?
Wait, before we get to your other question, can I follow up your Star Wars analogy to say that hopefully the new, whatever the new pinnacle, because you were talking earlier about how, like, we haven't reached the pinnacle of what improv could be, but we can work on it and maybe we can get there now that we've got all this other stuff going on, these new lessons. for me, and I clearly, I don't know how you feel about it, but for me, The Mandalorian was a step up, a step where it brought the world of Star Wars to so many more people that had never seen it before. And because we were all stuck at home at the same time and it came out week to week, it was this thing that our generation had not been able to do for a long time, which was experience this thing all together, be in on this world, discuss what happened in the past and in the future. Also, my favorite part was having a teenager explain to me where it was in the actual timeline. I was like, okay, that's where the Mandalorian is. But like the idea of that as an art, as a piece of art, and how it really brought us all together in a way that like Star Wars hadn't for a while. You're right. There was like, oh, I think this is better. Oh, I think that is, I like these, but I don't like those. But I feel like across the board, everybody was like, hey, Mandalorian is great. And then also people who had never, ever, 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 ever watched were like, hey, what's this thing everyone's watching? Oh, that's fun. Let's do it. And brought people together. And I wonder if to maintain the improv to Star Wars universe analogy, if maybe we just need an improv Mandalorian show that will then bring improv to the masses in a way that they're like, I love it. Guys, did you know that improv was a thing? And you're like, yeah, pretty much for a long, 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 long time. But I don't know how your personal feelings on Mandalorian, but I felt like that brought the ideas together.
Well, no, and that's fair, because one of the reasons why The Mandalorian worked was it stopped trying to be Star Wars. Maybe that's the, that's the secret of, maybe it's the improvisers talking about food is perhaps the Mandalorian of improv, because we don't talk about improv. But you know, that's it. I think Mandalorian is at its weakest, and I'm not a big fan of all of it. Primarily not because it's Star Wars, but because I think the person, what's the chap's name who plays the Mandalorian? I should know this.
Pedro Pascal. Oh,
Pedro Pascal. I don't think he's a very good actor behind a mask, which is a shame for a Star Wars film when you see what other actors who wore masks in the films were able to achieve behind a mask. I don't think he's a great mask actor. There's very little emotion that you draw on him. But when you look at the likes of, say, Darth Vader, what he did behind what Prowse and James Earl Jones were able to do, it's fantastic. Anyway, I'm going off point. But yeah, I mean, maybe there is a lesson for improv in that, you know, when we come out of this, we know the UCB models may not be working. We know big theaters aren't going to be around. People will still want to make a living from this art form. So what can we do to tap into that? I mean, the entertainment industry is going to be there for the taking. The entertainment market is going to be there for the taking when this opens up. You know, ask your friends when society goes back to normal, what's the first thing they're going to do? And I don't mean your improviser friends, because they're going to obviously say probably improv, but ask your other friends, what's the first thing they're going to do? I imagine the first thing people will want to do is connect socially. Mm-hmm. Improv has a part to play in that if it's community based, but it can't be the same as what it was. It has to be something new, something fresh, and I don't know what that is. Somebody else will find that out for us. But I think for us to remember, the entertainment industry, the button has been reset when we do come through this. But not everyone is going to want to necessarily be crowding comedy theaters at first. They probably want to just be hanging with friends, going on holiday, having parties. So that's something for us to consider. I mean, wouldn't it be very disappointing if, maybe it wouldn't, maybe I'm just old, but wouldn't it be very disappointing if the first thing you do is, when this is all over, is go to see that same improv team perform that same show in that same space that they did for years beforehand and nothing has changed? I mean, that would probably be a little bit of a shame. Also, isn't it? It's also very enticing when you think about it too. I don't know if that makes any sense. I guess we're speculating on something that hasn't happened yet. True.
No, it's all right. I mean, we're discussing what is happening to us right now. And I think that there's something really valid about exploring, you know, what we, I'm going to use this term loosely and both of us are going to be embarrassed by it, improv leaders are doing about, you know, moving forward as a community, as a global community, as an art form, right? Now that we've had this chance to connect with each other, like there are things about improv and performance that I didn't know about until I have connected with and met and worked with people across the globe, right? I mean, like, my connection to the Indian improv scene alone has opened my mind to like 3 or 4 different styles I didn't know were there, different kinds of community building in a way that I was like, man, this is so great. Like, why didn't we ever think about this? Like, and it's just because we're in different places with different, you know, models, and everyone's trying to do what we thought was the right thing to do, and following whatever makes sense. It's like we're just winging it because we're doing improv, right? But it almost brings it back to earlier you mentioned that people are always saying to you, like, why don't you write a comedy sketch? You do improv. It's like saying, like, you're great at acting. You should be a business owner. Yeah, no, those things are different. Those are definitely mm-hmm. different parts of the brain. They're different parts of, like, just general skill sets. Like, you also have to have a focus that's totally different for both of those things, you know, for all those things. And it's like people expect it to work that way, and it just doesn't. So I think this conversation is fully valid because we have both had life experiences where we have been working and making money as improvisers, improv teachers, doing things. And now the, you know, rug was pulled out from under us, and we're trying to figure out what it can be. And if nothing else, we have to maintain a level of optimism because, like the idea when people say, like, oh, art is unnecessary, I'm like, okay, go back in your hole because you don't know anything. Like, it's literally the only thing. Like, there isn't other things. Like, what are you talking about? You couldn't... It's just like such a ridiculous idea that would be it. And also, like, do you want to know how we're going to make it through the next couple of years after this? It's literal artists crunching ideas like we are right now, trying to figure out how we can heal, like, as people, as, like, humans, right? And if anybody needs anything, we need improv, right? If I did not have the improv skills of my life before this happened, I don't know what I would have done. I haven't had a job in a year. Like, I've done a few teaching jobs, very tiny little teaching jobs here and there. Not enough to pay any bills. Like, maybe a coffee. Enjoy that coffee, right? But the idea of being an improviser and being able to just turn it over, make it something new. Okay, well, what's next? All right, well, that didn't work. Great. Next thing, right? That willingness, that font of optimism and constant ideas. Like earlier when you said quantum leap and I'd struggled to pay attention because my brain like spilled out with 1,000 creative ideas. Like, that's just the way it works. Once you prime your brain as an improviser, your brain then is just like idea, 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 idea. And so when you have a hard time, you're like, okay, what do I do now? How do I do this? How can I change this? What's going to happen? How's it going to work? And you're able. You have these skills now. And everybody needs these skills, especially right now, right? How do I reinvent myself 14 times in a year? Like, you know, wild. So to go back to whatever the thing that I cut you off when I mentioned The Mandalorian was, you were going to tell me a nice story. And if you remember what it is, I'd love to hear it.
I can't remember now. That's terrible. We'd have to pause it, rewind, and have a listen.
No, you're fine. Don't worry.
I think it was about what am I doing to kind of give me that creative.
What's your jam? Yeah.
I cut up my game with fitness. That was a weird thing because, you know, everyone likes to have some kind of outlet, be it going for walks or whatever. So I've kind of taken that as kind of in a way my new improv because I do it 5-6 times a week, and that's interesting. But you know what's funny about it is I've gotten it's really started to replace aspects of improv because now I watch YouTube videos about fitness instead of watching YouTube videos about improv. And you realize that even when in the fitness community, they have community problems no different than improv has community problems. So that I realized that was kind of nice to know that we're normal in that regard. I did some fun sketches on YouTube early in the pandemic, all improvised, but I didn't go down there. A lot of people have kind of, you know, TikTok accounts and are doing cool stuff on that, but it's just kind of not my bag. I just when I wake up in the morning, the first thing I think of is improv. And then when I go to bed at night, the last thing I think of is improv. And I don't mean that in a very, you know, poncy way, but it's like my brain is thinking in that way, you know. Everything that I do, there's an improv layer to it. Even when I'm working with some of my corporate clients and I'm teaching them stuff, you know, I've taught corporate clients improv without telling them that I'm teaching them improv, because if I did, they wouldn't, you know, agree to contract with me. But, you know, so that's how my brain is wired. And, you know, when you're devoid of your outlet via the stage or via in-person classes, that can be quite sad. It can be quite unhealthy to still, you know, have your brain dominated by a world of improv when you can't, you know, release that tension. But so I think sustainability with that, I mean, this is the thing now, you know, when the pandemic started, we were all in this together. That was the quote, but now we're very much not in this together. I mean, the US is going to be well fully vaccinated. I think Biden said by May, which might be ambitious, but not unrealistic. You know, Ireland is looking like it could be 10 years before we all get vaccinated because the European vaccine plan has messed up. So the world is coming out of this at a different pace. And for a lot of us, certainly in Europe, we're looking down a longer lens of when, you know, we do go back to normal. So what is sustainable for us creatively and is a big question, you know, because we could have another year of this before we go back into the theater, before we get back into the training room. So how are we going to keep ourselves occupied and fulfilled from an art perspective in that period of time? Because it may not be improv that does that, and that's okay. It's okay, you know. That's very existential. There's my crisis now. It's a midlife crisis live on a podcast.
You know, though, to be honest, if I've talked about anything often in my podcast, it's about the changes that we have as we move forward as an artist, and how we can't hold ourselves to these dreams of the past. Like I mentioned earlier, when I was like 18 years old, I wanted to do XYZ, but now it's like the ideas that I had about what I was going to do were like, no, okay, great. I did a few of the things that I had on the bucket list, and then I was like, ooh, all right, well, that wasn't what I wanted it to be. And then, you know, or it was, and then I checked it off and was like, okay, well, let's move forward from there. I mean, even myself personally right now, I'm trying to figure out how to redirect my artistic career. Like, okay, what can I do that's gonna be kind of what I want, but also, and also with all this stuff with COVID and things that have gone on, you know, there's an urge to want to help people, you know. So I'm like, okay, how do I help the world and also do art, and also like what position can I take in the world, in a job or whatever, that's gonna help me on multiple platforms, right? And also, I feel like as you get older, I don't know how old you are, I'm in my 40s. So it's like, now that I'm older, I'm like looking for more out of my art than just the art, right? It's like, yeah, it was fun to perform on stage and I'm into it. I can't wait to perform on stage again. I literally cannot wait until I can stand on a stage in front of hundreds, maybe thousands of people and speak to them all at once. That's like my favorite thing in the world. But like, when will it happen? I don't know. Do I need to find a new way to figure out how that works? Yeah. You know, right now, my main thing is podcasting. We're super safe. We're having this great conversation. We're enjoying ourselves. There's no way we're going to infect each other. And we're still accomplishing great things. Both where our conversation is, how it contributes to the community that listens to it, and then podcasting as its own art. I personally am like leaning into that and how that develops, right? So I don't think there's any shame or any problems. You know, nobody has to feel like, oh, I've given up. I feel like art changes and what we need from art changes. Like if we didn't ebb and flow, we'd be caught in the past, right? Like we need to open ourselves up to what could be next. And yeah, I mean, maybe it's just tiny little bits that we pull from all the new people that we have around us and like all the different new things that we learn from different places. And then it's like, okay, this is how it works in my world. Because yeah, I'm learning lots of things from all across the world, but like the way the Austin improv community works is way different than a lot of places that I've talked to, right? Like a few theaters in Austin, like the physical spaces have closed, but the community of improvisers in town is still solid. There is like huge like connections of people taking care of each other, doing performances. Like, I'm not worried about that. I live in a solid town for, and I'm not even in charge of the community, but the community thrives and I can just occasionally swing in and out of it. The other thing too is building community changes the way it works. And as much as I, you know, was the person who was in charge of an improv school at one point, maybe I'm not the right person to be in charge of it now. Maybe I don't know what the right moves would be. So I have to let that be somebody else's job and go and do something else. And with the skills that I've learned, at this point, side note to what we're talking about. So we're talking about like our careers and how we've developed them. I feel like we've talked a lot about where we are right now and how we feel right now about the world. But just as a, you know, as a story for experience during the course of your career, is there any show or workshop or festival? You are were running an improv festival for a while. Like, what? Tell me about a fun experience during the course of your career that you've enjoyed, some fun time or even something you've learned from. It can be fun and learning at the same time. But, you know, some experience from your past that's that you've been thinking about lately.
God, the list is endless. I think one of the things that one of my pride and joys, one of the things I love is Improv Utopia. Now, I am affiliated with Improv Utopia, but I wasn't always. How that experience came up was I came across a random tweet for an improv camp. And camp in Europe isn't the same as camp in the US. You know, it's not a cultural thing. I came across this tweet and like they replied, Nick Armstrong replied. And so I went to what was their first East Camp, as they call it, in Pennsylvania, but not their first ever Improv Utopia camp. And I was blown away at the camaraderie, the community that was there. Some of those people are good close friends of mine. And I honestly got over the 24-hour initial shock of a place where everyone was so vulnerable, openly lovely, and so warm and welcoming, which immediately my Irishness was like, wait, there's a catch. I can't warm to this at all. Once I got over that, everything was fine. But at every Improv Utopia camp that, and there's, you know, there prior to COVID, there was three in the US and one in Ireland. There's always something to take away from each of those experiences. And I'm not trying to, I know it sounds like, oh, Neil, you're here plugging Improv Utopia. I'm actually not. There's just something, the people behind it, the team behind it, are just incredible people. They're people who genuinely, genuinely care and love improv and love the people around it. And when you see that in its purest form, it's incredibly humbling and a lovely thing to witness. And there is a thing that I know will bounce back very strong after when this all emerges. But every time I've gone there, it's always been a kind of a reset button. Every camp that I've attended has always been a kind of a reset button to appreciate everything that is there in the improv world and in the community, to appreciate people of all levels and experience, because you get to take workshops from a variety of teachers. And part of the joy of it is you get to take workshops and things that you wouldn't necessarily normally sign up to for whatever reason, but here you can. And that's quite joyful. I think, you know, my first ever camp, just to kind of go on about that, it was in this camp in Pennsylvania. And I just remember the people in my cabin, Josh Nichols was the camp counselor, which I remember when I got that email, I was like, wait, I have a counselor? Is this like a therapy camp? Because we don't have camp in Ireland. And another chap, Sean Geary, was in my cabin, and they were just such warm, welcoming people. It was overwhelmingly wonderful. But I remember this profound experience where when we did the cabin shows, and we asked Paul Valancourt, Bear Shark Mice, if he would be on our troop. So it was a bit of a geeky moment. You know, I'd taken a class with him, and he's great. And it was like, oh, here's a chance to be with Paul Valancourt on stage. And I had that, you know, I had that beginner's improv feeling of, oh God, I'm on a team with Paul Valancourt. I better not suck. And I remember being on stage, standing at the side going, maybe if I don't go out, it would be best for everyone. And it was great, because it was that moment where I realized, you know, it was a moment where I realized, you know, this never ends. This journey never ends. You know, it doesn't matter what you've done up to now. You're still on that learning curve, no matter how much experience you have. And that was really nice. That was a really nice thing to do. I can't remember anything that happened during the show because it was such a rush. So that was a nice moment. And I do think about Improv Utopia a lot, because it was such a powerful, such an infectious place, you know, with the community, with the people that are there. And it's something I'm very much looking forward to getting back to when this is over.
Yeah, it sounds great. Also, I've always wanted to do it.
Sorry, the only thing I was going to say was also people who do improvised singing and improvised hip hop are thriving during the pandemic, particularly MC Hammersmith in Edinburgh. His videos are just fantastic. But yeah, I mean, that's a skill I wish I had so I could churn out the content on TikTok and entertain the millions.
Parody songs and satirical homemade videos are like the bread and butter right now. Like that's what the comedy of the right now is, for sure. If you can write a parody song that like I have a friend who makes these amazing parody songs, and I'll send you some videos because I'm just like obsessed. Jamal Knox, shout out to you, makes the best videos where it like just is, it's like, how do you even find the time to, this just happened and you're releasing this video about what's going on, right? Oh my God, such good stuff. That for me is like, I am not the kind of person who has my finger on the pulse like that. Like, I like to look at cultural changes in a larger swath, like in a farther away, like, okay, in 20 years, this is what we're going to take from this. Because for me, I'm working the long game. Like, I'm not going to stop being an artist. At no point in my life am I going to be like, all right, let's be a banker. Like, it's just not going to happen. So I am always trying to think further out, like artistically. Also, the other thing is like, okay, great. You want to write a movie? Cool. You're going to make it in 8 years. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so I hope you're not writing a movie that's only good for right now, because that's not, sorry, we're over that now. It's like, you know, so I appreciate these people, like you said, like your friend who's like just so on point, and the people who are like using what they're good at to immediately illuminate and create this art around, guess what insanity happened today? Let me sing a song about it. I was a little, when you mentioned the music, I was like, you know, it's weird. I've tried to sing on Zoom and we can't sync up. So I don't know how that works, but I understand now when a person makes a video and they pre-record themselves and do the editing work on their own thing. But I was like, no, man, I've legit taught workshops with people and tried to all sing together and it just does not work out at all. So at first I was like, wait, what? You got a musical improv show that's working? Tell me about it. One final question I wanted to ask you. Thank you so much for sharing your time with me. What advice would you give to, you know, new artists, improvisers, people that are just starting out about, you know, how they should explore improv in this new world, or, you know, what they should be thinking about when it comes to navigating becoming an artist and doing theatrical things in this current world?
Oh, pull up a chair. So a lot of things, because a lot of that question kind of stemmed in how I, you know, went on to do Neil Plus One. So I think step away from guruism in improv, or step away from guruism in anything. But first and foremost, learn from as many teachers as you can. And don't assume that just because someone's a guru, that's the one-stop shop for learning improv, because it just doesn't work that way. You know, when I think about the standout workshops of my time, I could name somebody and, you know, a lot of the planet might say, oh, I don't know who that is. So be wary of guruism. Second thing is, there are things you will hear in improv that aren't necessarily going to feel right or seem right. So, you know, that thing of, if you're not having fun, you're the asshole. We as improvisers, we all know what that means. But when you're learning, that doesn't mean you're an asshole, because the first thing you're going to do if you're struggling is feel like it's not fun. And then you hear that expression and it's going to make you feel bad. But we all know as we go on what that really means. You can't break improv. You genuinely can't break improv. So you will come across again, leading to the things we say in improv that we don't practice all the speech, like this whole thing of you can't do improv wrong, but you have to do it like this, you know, that doesn't work. So recognize that, you know, choices you make in improv aren't right and wrong. They're just choices that you make that make your life easier or they make your life harder when you're on stage. And failure is a big part of that, and that's okay. But find then, as you go on your journey, find the thing about improv that you like and do that. Because you might realize you're doing something in improv. You know, maybe you're taking a course and you're not liking it or you're not getting it. Maybe it's because you just don't like that thing in improv. Don't do that. If you find something in improv that you quite enjoy doing, do that until it becomes boring. Because improv as a word, as an art form, it's like sport. It's like somebody saying, I love sport. You know, oh, do you like cricket? Oh, no, I don't like cricket. I like other sports. I just don't like cricket. So that's like saying, I love improv. Oh, do you like musical improv? Well, actually, no, I don't like musical improv. You know, it's kind of like that. So and that's okay. And if there's a particular style approach that you like doing, do it until it gets boring. You know, that's what will make it fun for you, because then you can understand what it means when somebody says, if you're not having fun, you're the asshole. So I think that's probably a lot for somebody if it was in a bar and they come up and said, do you need advice about improv? But certainly that's some things to think of. Not everything you hear is going to make sense. Not everything you hear is possibly going to be right. But it, you know, find what's fun for you along the way. And definitely, please, please, please learn from as many teachers as you can. Very important. You will be surprised at what will surprise you.
Mm. Don't worry, you're giving advice to the kind of person who listens the full hour into the podcast. So that's like a good crowd. Like, they didn't stop halfway through. They made it all the way to the end. These are my diehards. They care. That's why they get the advice.
Improv is all scripted. No, the cat's out of the bag. They're still listening. Oh, it's all scripted.
Oh, yeah. No.
We don't make it up at all.
Oh, man. There's just scripts from the grave just coming out of Del Close's grave. Just, we just take completely, them completely. And we just read them. What does it say? I'm a cat. Well, thank you, Neil, so much for being on the podcast and chatting with me. It has been quite a journey, you and I chatting. I feel so like we've talked about culture and the path of art and just deep good stuff. So thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Amy, for having me on. It has been quite an unexpected experience in terms of where we went conversation wise, but it's been great. So thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.